So listeners, like, right now, good. Right now we are like, trying. We're all doing pen tricks. Right, let's see. Can Pen do?
I'm doing
can
it.
Ben do it?
Yes, you're doing the drumstick thing.
Yeah, I'm doing the drumstick thing. That was all yes. I was ever going to try to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. You're doing the drumstick thing. So, I'm talking about
look at how
this.
Good I am at this.
Yeah, now you do. Now you get a quarter or like a poker chip.
I mean,
okay. Karen, I feel good about what I've done so far. I don't need to take it to the next level.
Okay, well,
so listeners, to catch up, we have now established that Nicole can do the drumstick twirling thing between her fingers. And, you know, to me, that's a quality start to a podcast.
Karen can do it even better.
Karen can do it almost immediately. I'm not even going to try. And here's
it's not
why.
Hard.
Here's why I'm not going to try. Not enough likes and comments on iTunes, guys. Oh. Oh, my God. I mean, look, we've gotten to, like, 40. And that's fine. But Nicole, if there were 40 people at a Bucky show, what would you say? You'd probably be like, this is fun, but I wish there were more, right?
I'd be fine.
Nicole's reluctantly saying
if it's
fine.
The 40 if it's the right 40 people that's
I don't
a great
know
audience.
If these are the right 40 comments. There's one comment that's almost illegible. I mean, like, you I'm not illegible, but you can barely understand what they're saying. It's the only one star of all the reviews. It's terrible. If you want to pull it up, it's probably not easy to pull up, but guys, I'll do more pen tricks when there's more iTunes and likes and comments. So
it's an awful incentive for people to leave comments.
And that's a long form conversation. Recorded at UCB Comedy Studios in New York City. This is the Long Form Conversations Podcast with your hosts, Sean Diston and Nicole Dressbelt. Hello, hi folks. My name's Sean Diston, and I'm here, of course, with my co-host Nicole Dressbell. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Nicole is currently looking up our bad review on iTunes. I don't know if you're going to be able to find it.
Is it a new bad review, or is it from the last era?
I think it's new.
Oh, God damn it.
And it's tough for me to really, I don't even want to get into it. I'll get too angry. But
did you write it?
No.
All right.
What do I look like, Terry Withers? Ladies and gentlemen, we have an amazing guest today. Comedy, I would say fan favorite. Got a lot of replies about having you on the show today. There was even an iTunes comment about bringing Karen Hammerberg on the show. Maybe left by Karen herself, but
I was worried. That's from the older one, and I was worried that I had gotten drunk and left that on there. But then I like went back and checked my calendar, and I think I was out on a tour co or something. And I was like, thank God, it wasn't me. But I was worried that it was me.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Karen Hammerberg is here.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, Karen. How are you?
I'm good.
Right
I'm really good.
Nicole is furiously looking for this iTunes thing.
Yeah,
I can't find it?
I
think that's
review,
a hard thing to
say...
drop right before we start a podcast.
Yeah, and it's also a hard thing to find on your iPhone. You need like a computer.
Yeah, it's only showing me like 18 of them. But Sean, not to be a monster, a ton of people have left new reviews.
Look, I like them. I enjoy them, but it's going to take a lot more.
I'm so close to getting my phone. And looking at the reviews. But I'm not going to do it.
No, there's a decent amount. Thank you for being on the show, Karen. I feel like we've got a lot to sort of talk about.
Okay.
So, Nicole, why don't we get in? Nicole, are you ready to start this podcast?
Yeah, I accidentally hit write a review.
Okay, get out. Give me your phone.
No.
Let's put it on airplane mode.
That's a good idea.
Karen, we like to ask all of our guests the same question to start. Nicole?
Oh, Karen, before you started taking UCB improv classes, who were you, where were you, and what
hey,
were,
what
you,
were
doing?
You doing?
I should pause because you're going to join
no,
in.
I do it late on purpose.
Oh.
I can see that he's pulling up the reviews.
I know.
This podcast isn't going to start.
This may never start.
My life before UCB classes is not nearly as interesting as this one-star review.
Did the one-star review get taken down? It doesn't look like it's up
no,
there.
No, it's up
click,
there.
Can you click the one-star?
You got to click
the
like
one-star
here and then go down, and then there's a one-star review. I feel terrible. This can't be the way we're starting this podcast.
We'll cut it out. Don't worry.
No, we can't cut it out now. It's too important.
Sean, it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. You dreamt. Oh, wait,
it
here
is.
It is.
Now read it. Read this review. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Nicole, so you can see it.
Just get to the...
Wait, start at the top. Start in the, like, description.
No, that, yeah, no. It's just
okay,
get
okay,
to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, the subject is just get to the... by My Kids Read. Topic, stop pretending to joke around. Oh, and if you are seriously joking around, then you are even more lamer.
So that,
okay,
that
so
doesn't
that
make...
Is, that is a heavy vote against the cold open.
Yeah, and also, for everything we've just done, they're upset because we haven't started the interview yet.
Okay.
So,
I think they'll like this cold open, though. Because this cold open is us doing a pen twirl that nobody can see.
Right, and we're not trying to be... All right, you know what? This was a bad place
no,
to
I get it. I get it, though, because new iPhones, you can't fast forward. So
what?
I get it. I'm saying, like, fast forward if you don't like it.
You can hit... Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, no,
It was being facetious. Okay, let's start this interview.
Yeah.
Karen, we asked you, where were you?
Yeah.
Who were you and what were you doing?
Yeah. Right before, well, I don't know. We'll do it this way. Right before I started, I had just moved to New York from Washington, D.C. I guess I had sort of like a career in documentary television.
Mm.
Sort of, that was sort of like quickly turning into a career in reality television.
Yeah.
Because it paid better. But I had just moved from Washington, D.C. with my boyfriend, who's now my husband, to just like do something new.
Just but like I, on a whim, sort of? Or was
well,
there a plan?
I had been doing comedy in Washington
DC.
And in Washington, D.C. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Let's talk about that because I think that's
okay.
A major point. I have a question here from Mr. Tony Showtime, Anthony Apruzzi.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks, I think the people from D.C. are so good at improv. This is verbatim what he wrote. What is the school of thinking in D.C. and is it like the UCB?
Yeah.
So you had a like sort of pre-improv career at UCB in D.C.
Yeah. Well, I first learned improv in high school in Chicago.
Mm.
A woman from Second City had come and she like taught us basically like the Herald structure and improv.
Interesting.
And then I was on a sketch improv team at my college in D.C. And then after I graduated, then I was at Washington Improv Theater, WIT, for like 3 years, maybe a little bit longer.
Did you always know you wanted to do comedy or is it something that sort of...
Well, I remember very specifically getting a laugh in high school from doing improv and being like, oh, I like this.
Mm.
And then seeing a flyer for like the improv group in college and I like...
So it was after someone had sort of was like, this is something you're doing today, whether you like it or not, and you enjoyed it. And
yeah.
Like, oh,
that's yeah.
Interesting.
But I like did, I was like acting and doing stuff and right. I like liked comedy, but I was never... But I didn't, and then even through like college and stuff, I was like getting this degree in media.
Right.
But then I guess sort of like the big thing, and I kind of did it in this weird way in Washington, D.C., where I was just like, okay, I'm going to go to New York now. Like, I'll see you guys later. And in my head, I was like, I want to go to UCB and I want to get on a Herald team.
Right.
And like, I want to be a comedian and I want to do all this stuff, but I didn't want to like say it out loud.
So you had heard of UCB because
yeah.
Because there's
yeah.
A lot of crossover.
Yeah. And even in college, we would talk about UCB.
Right.
For sure. And, you know, like the show, but also like... Just that UCB, you know, was sort of like the thing to do.
So when you say you and your husband moved here kind of for a change,
it was coming
to UCB.
Yeah, but I didn't tell anybody that.
Did your husband know that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's like so super supportive. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
But I didn't tell anybody. I was like, we're just going to go. Bye.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
And immediately you're in the game. You take a class like almost immediately.
Yeah, immediately. I think I signed up. For a class, I signed up for a one-on-one intensive, I think, before we moved.
So you'd been in D.C. doing improv there for 3 years.
Three or 4 years, yeah.
How deep in, what were you doing there at that point? What does that mean?
I was on two, like, house teams there, and one of them was sort of, like, the premier team, mm-hmm. Like the sort of team that had started Washington Improv Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was teaching there. So like I was pretty ingrained and embedded in the improv scene.
So when you get to UCB and you know you have to start back at step one.
Yeah.
Is there any misgivings about that or frustration? Or are you just so excited to be at UCB you don't care?
I was really nervous. And then once 101 started, I was like, oh my God, I love this.
Great.
Going back to 101, having like a foundation of improv already is so much fun.
It's
so
all joy,
much fun.
Right?
Yeah. I had every single one of my classes, I think maybe until 401, I was just like, this is so fun. This is so great. I'm having such a good time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I loved it.
I want to just talk about DC a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are some of your contemporaries maybe that we would know, or some people that came from DC before or after you? Because I get this crew confused with the Chicago crew sometimes. Because they come in so good.
Yeah.
Is why I confuse it.
So Josh Patton left, I think, a little bit before I got like super involved in DC. And Natasha Rothwell we overlapped a little bit. Dan Hodapp and Zach Phillips were like kind of also on their way out as I was going.
Was it also Jubin maybe?
Yeah, he was like a little bit, they were all sort of like maybe like a generation ahead of me. But yeah, but Dan Hodapp put me on his team. I replaced him kind of on team when he moved to New York. And then there's like a whole bunch of other people who I guess aren't like on
teams yet, but are around
that are going to be great. And like that, I think that's like a pretty, and I'm sure I'm forgetting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm forgetting people.
What are the sort of parallels? Did you feel like learning game at UCB and all this stuff was new, or was there a version of that in Washington?
I guess there was like a version of it, but I don't think. It wasn't like the same terms.
Right.
I would say when I was in DC, and I'm not sure, I haven't been there for 5 years, so I don't know like what the deal is now. But when I was there, like the big focus was like the relationship between the characters and like how they felt about each other, and like that was sort of like the main. And we'd always say like, "What's going on between your characters?" or like, "What's happening between your characters?" And I think we would sort of do like a version of this is true, what else is true, or sort of like, but it would be like, "How do they treat each other? Like, what's their history, whatever."
Right.
Like, so it was really, I feel like, relationship based. Mm-hmm. And it was always about like how you felt about your scene partner.
And what were performances like?
They were
just like Harolds or
yeah scenes? We did a Harold for a while, or we did like montages, and then like because DC is sort of a different city, so like we would do like these hour-long like holiday shows where we like, it was like had some like short form aspects to it, because it wasn't like New York where there's like this audience. It's like, oh, yeah.
Long
like
form,
I know all about long form. So we had sort of like different sort of things. It was still long form for sure. But there were like, we had like little like pieces of paper from the audience that we would like read from like throughout the show or whatever. That was actually really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you're taking classes at UCB. Who are the teachers that you started with?
Oh, my God. It's the quiz part.
I know.
Is it a quiz? I mean,
I think Karen pointed that out. I think it does have a quiz element.
Okay.
And I don't know for sure. So I took 101. I zoomed through classes at UCB.
Right, because you did an intensive.
I took 101 intensive, and I took 201 in intensive. Mm. So I know I had Gavin for 101.
Right. I guess it's easy to forget because you only maybe have him for a week.
Yeah.
And then you have another teacher.
A week or 2 weeks.
And you don't know who anyone is at the time.
And I didn't know. Right? Yeah. So I had Gavin for sure. Maybe for all of 101. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think for all of it. And then I think for 201, I know that I had Neil Casey and I think Ari Vukaitis.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those could have been like part
in
of
the 101. Right.
Yeah.
It was
but
all
I think,
sort of a blur.
Yeah. Because
it was within a month you had done 101 and 201.
Yeah.
Right.
And in 201, I was still like very nervous, and I actually had a friend, my friend Aparna, took the class with me, and we never sat next to each other or talked to each other during the
really?
Class.
Really? Wow.
Why?
I don't know. We just like didn't want to like make it
seem that like you guys were like friends and knew each other.
We were like, confident people that like could chat.
Would you guys like hang out at other times?
Yeah, all the time.
That's so bizarre.
That is weird.
We even like came and left class together, and
that's super weird.
Yeah, that's
us,
really
not
weird.
To judge
for
Karen,
us,
but
it's, for us, it like made perfect sense.
That's so
for like
funny.
Who we were.
Did you talk about it, or was there just an understanding that this is what you were doing?
We talk about it now and laugh about it.
That's okay,
so
great. But that
funny.
Was not your game plan going into the class.
No. We did not talk about it beforehand. It just, I think, like the first day, like
you
we
ended
just
up
didn't.
On different ends, and you weren't going to like be too loud.
Yeah.
To be like, hey,
yeah.
That's so funny.
That is really funny.
I think in general, I was very nervous to seem like I was over familiar with improv. Like I didn't ever want to be that person that like raised my hand. I was
in
DC.
Well, here's the thing: is you taught in DC,
yeah, I did.
So you understand what those
Yeah, kind of I guess
problem
that's true.
Students
yeah.
are like.
Yeah.
So you're like trying to be the perfect student
yeah.
in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would imagine if I took a class, I wouldn't say a fucking word. I would just sit there and enjoy it.
I don't know if I like spoke out like directly to a teacher until 401. I really don't think I did. And then 301, I had Gavin again,
right?
Which was great. I mean, he's such a good teacher, mm-hmm. and I think for 301, he was so great. And then 401, I had Kevin Hines, and then I had a 501 with Delaney. Mm.
Did you? So you loved the UCB going in already, like the reputation. At what point did it? Not change, but at one point did you become like completely convinced that this is what you were doing? Was it like right away, or did it take some classes before you were like ingrained in the community?
I don't think I've ever been ingrained in that community.
Right.
I actually think that that's like one thing that I don't think I realized how important the community was when I came here. Mm-hmm. And I zoomed through classes. I took 101 through 501, I think, in a year, maybe less than a year, auditioned for a Herald team and got on a Herald team. Mm. Like, I was so focused on
going through
doing that,
yeah.
that I, like, missed meeting people and I, like, missed getting to know people.
Do you think part of that, Sean's going to hate this question, but do you think part of that is also having moved to New York with a partner? Because I do think when you have somebody to hang out, you hate when I talk about like relationship stuff or personal stuff.
No, I was thinking the same thing.
But I do think it's like different when you're starting and you have a partner because you have someone to go home to, you have someone you want to go home to, you don't need to stay out drinking until all hours of the night.
Well, I did that. I just didn't do it until I was on a Herald team.
Right. But do you think you would have done it sooner?
No.
If you didn't have the love of your life?
I really don't. No, I mean, maybe. I really just didn't. It just didn't really.
It might have more to just be. Like coming through a community and already kind of going through that, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I was just really focused. Like, I was really into it. And I guess part of it maybe was like, I had a lot of experience. And so, like, I was never on a practice team.
Right.
I was never in an indie team. I, like, did like three shows with this group from the pit for like, and then I got on a Herald. Like, mm-hmm. I never was like involved. I really just, I like missed it. And I like really regret that now that I like was so. I was so focused. But to be fair too, like I had a lot of friends from college who
right.
were here. So I did like know people.
Mm-hmm.
And like I had a lot of comedy friends from college, and then I had a lot of just regular friends from college that aren't like mm-hmm. horrible comedy people. So like I knew people. But I don't think I realized until I got on a Herald team like how important meeting people in your classes are and hanging out with people in your classes. And like, I don't think I got that.
Did you audition one time?
Yeah.
And got on. So you never got to experience the, like, pain of not getting on a team.
I did. I mean, I auditioned for a team in D.C. and I didn't get on it.
Right.
I don't think it's the same level as Herald teams here. But no, I was just, like, really focused.
Yeah.
That's so interesting, though, that you were that focused but weren't in a practice group.
I think part of that is because I had done so much improv.
Yeah.
I had done so much improv before.
So classes were almost enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I had just moved to New York, you know what I mean? Like everything was like really new, but like I had performed at the Kennedy Center. Like
right.
I had performed for like, I don't know how many people, that's like thousands of people. Like,
right.
So it wasn't, the improv was never like the scary part to me.
Right. It was just like,
you know?
Getting up to speed with what is expected in
yeah.
New York and like get.
Yeah.
Gotcha. What was so appealing to you about UCB though?
I think, well, I had a friend who was on a Herald team from college. And I had a bunch of college friends who had moved to New York and were doing stuff at UCB. And I think just like the reputation
mm-hmm.
that this was like the best place to do comedy. But I like really. In terms of being like a straight up comedy nerd, like I didn't know who Will Hines was. I didn't know, you know, like I didn't
right.
know who, I don't know. I guess maybe I'd heard of Anthony King as the artistic director, but mm-hmm. like I didn't really know. I knew Chris Gethard because we had sort of like met in college. He came and did a Torco and like had met in college and he was like very kind to me. But like I didn't know like the lore of UCB. You know,
it was just the reputation of
it was just the reputation that this was like the best place to go. And it felt and I was like and I think I like immediately sort of as soon as in my head I decided that I wanted to do comedy, I was like, well, I have to go to the place that'll validate me the most.
It's either New York or LA, kind of.
And it was like that New York, like UCB in New York will be the thing that if I can do it, then it'll validate that I can do it.
Right. Mm. So then you get, so you're hustling, you're focusing, you're super driven, and then you get on a house team.
Yeah.
And is it like, okay, great, I have to remain driven throughout this, or does it feel like you can take a breath, or...
That was
Mr. Crime.
Yeah, that was Mr. Crime.
Mr. Crime, the team that is notorious for the people on the team talking about how terrible it was.
Really?
Like, I mean, only Alexis Pereira, I guess.
I don't know that that's what Mr. Crime is notorious for.
I don't know that Mr. Crime is notorious for everything.
Well, what I mean is every time I mention Mr. Crime to someone on Mr. Crime, they have your sort of reaction now.
Yeah. I mean,
that's true.
I think we all knew that it wasn't working.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But here's the thing, though, is that I have memories of seeing Mr. Crime do great shows. Like, I saw your first show. I saw the cage match where you guys did like a bunch of heralds.
Oh, yeah. We did it as many heralds as we could. Yeah.
I mean, and if you think about the people on those teams, on that team, it's like, this is an incredible group of improvisers.
Yeah.
Why the reaction? What is the thing that comes into your head?
Well, I would.
Shout out Alexis Pereira, by the way.
Shout out to Alexis Pereira. And I think I can name all of them.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Oh, here's the quiz.
Okay. Kristen Akimovic.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Zach. Mm-hmm. Willis. Paul Higby.
Mm-hmm.
Riley Soliner. Mm-hmm. Paul Higby.
Mm-hmm. You said that.
Oh, did I?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
That's five.
Wait, that's
yourself?
Only five?
I think you're...
No, and then me. Am I forgetting someone?
You didn't say Alexis Pereira.
Oh, well, we already said Alexis.
You are forgetting someone, but he's doing fine, so I think it's okay.
Oh, Amos. Yeah. It's so funny. Amos and I have been on like 40 teams together.
Yeah.
And Amos, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Amos is a safe person to forget, I think, because he's like secure. He's okay. It doesn't feel mean to forget Amos. It's just
I wasn't going to forget him. You guys stopped me before I was done.
You forgot.
I forgot him, which is crazy. I really love Amos. Mm-hmm. We were just young and we were really scared and we were, that's it. I think we were just really
you guys were
scared.
It was an interesting audition because I think you were the only brand new team.
We were.
And was this 10 teams? No.
No.
This was back to 8 teams.
This was years after 10 teams.
Yeah, this was it? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was related.
I mean, I'm going to say what I'm thinking, but this is June 2011?
Yeah.
Yes, June 2011, so it's late.
Yeah.
Totally how do I do that? Because that's when Dybbuk got broken up.
Okay, got it. All right.
I take a shot every time the breakup of this very mediocre Herald team gets mentioned.
Cool.
So you said like it was like rough and.
So it was all of our first Herald teams.
Right.
And it was when we were just sort of like young and we were really scared. We were the only new team. Anthony put us on a team and then left almost immediately.
Right. And was that still the time where if you were like you could have two shows a month or something?
Yeah,
for sure.
And we were practicing, oh my God. So what was it? We were practicing twice a week. Mm. We were practicing twice a week, had shows on Tuesday. And then at a certain point, then we were doing whatever that show at the Beast was.
Wednesdays with Harold or something?
Yeah.
Cheating
on Harold.
Cheating on Harold.
Yeah.
We were doing Cheating on Harold. And then I think we were booking a lot of indie shows because we were like, the more time we spend together, the better we'll be. So we were seeing each other like 4 or 5 times a week, maybe more. And we were not getting along.
So you're making it worse, probably.
We were making it so much worse.
Wow.
We were making it so
you're
much
forcing
worse.
Forcing yourselves
We
on
were
each
forcing
other.
Ourselves. And then things would go bad, and then we'd be like, we gotta recommit.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, I think
God.
That's...
Yeah, and that's, we were just spending so much time together, and we were so scared, and we were so... And we all had sort of our own, like, weaknesses that I think were being sort of, like, exploited through that team. And it just... And what's really funny is now, like, the song that we came out to was that Beach Boys song that was like, wouldn't it be nice if we were older? And now
it literally
it's, like,
is
it's
the
so
message.
True.
Yeah.
I think we all have so much affection for each other. And we're like, God, if we were a team right now, we'd be so baller.
Yeah.
But we were so scared.
I think the... being around each other so much thing is like it magnifies things. So like if you guys are doing well, that starts to sort of stump, you know, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it was just one of those things where like maybe you had one rough show and had to see each other for four times that week.
Oh my God.
Or someone pissed you off over email and now you have to see them four times that week. I think that's such a common new team thing.
It is. Well, and then it was like Sandino had like a book club. And and so we were like, we're going to do a club. So we tried to have like a music review club.
No.
And then Kristen and I were, I was always like planning activities. So we did like a very elaborate Secret Santa. Where we were basically just setting each other up to fail. And then we went to Washington, D.C. together. Like, we were, like,
did
forcing.
A lot, yeah.
We had a Tumblr that was very active.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you did.
I remember the Mr. Crime Gazette.
Mm-hmm. And it was a very active. We were just, like, I think we could have tricked people into thinking that we were a team that got along really well.
I think that's a new team thing where you think you can, like, just strangle it into submission, or if you hold it the right way, you can fix it.
Yeah.
And I think,
and then I think sometimes people realize, like, that's a mistake, but then they check out. Like, they go too far the other way.
I don't know if anyone ever checked out, which probably was part of the problem.
Yeah.
We all probably could have checked out for a while, and it would have gotten a lot better. Nobody, I don't know if anyone ever had, like, a chill moment on Mr. Crime.
Wow.
Oh, God.
I saw their first show. Loved it. Loved it.
First show means nothing.
I guess it does. It doesn't mean anything. You hear that, all the new teams out there? First show means nothing.
So were you guys around a year?
I think we were around for like eight months or 9 months.
Okay, so you probably made it through the like auditions that were 3 months later and then like another 6 months after that.
Yes, I think that's what we did.
Because there was a quick audition after with the UID, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he left Mr. Crime together.
Right, maybe the only team.
So something weird.
Yeah.
Something weird.
It's so crazy because you're right. Like, those improvisers, put them together on a team now, it would be like
great. It would be so good.
It would be so good.
What opening did you do? For the longest. Which one was the
I think we did something that we called like the Flock of Awesome, which was like character monologues that we would sort of like tag into and then like mirror each other like around it. I think that's what we did for the longest. Honestly though, it was like 4 years ago.
Yeah. So and it
I
was
really
like,
don't know.
And you've been on a few teams since then.
Yeah.
So after Mr. Crime, you jumped to
Surfing.
Surfing.
I'm
which
pretty
was
sure.
A
yeah,
6 month
yeah.
run?
6 month run.
Right. And that was
with
like,
Amos Vernon.
With Amos.
Right.
I remember Dan Black.
Dan Black. Zach Phillips and Dan Hodapp.
People who you knew from D.C.
People I knew from D.C.
Interesting.
Mujan was on the team.
Wow. I would
Matt
never
Kleinman.
Remember that.
Yeah, I remember Mujan.
It was a very, and Murph.
And yep. Murph, yeah.
Is that all? Oh, God. We didn't count. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Is it fine? I'm sorry.
We're all human. It's fine.
I should have written it down.
No,
there are lineups written on the Improv Resource Center wiki, so you can look up.
Yeah, look it up.
Look it up.
We had a lot of fun. We were like kind of a weird fun team. Mm-hmm. Dan Black left in the middle of it, and we got Natasha Vainblatt, which was great, which is how I met her, and I love her so much.
Do you, so like in this experience, compared to like the house team experience in D.C., you sort of, I mean, in 3 years, you were on the premier team out there, right?
Yeah.
So did this feel like, was there a frustration or was there still just fun being on the team, being able to perform at UCB?
You know what? I don't know. There was no frustration.
Right.
At all. I was really, and even now I'm very, very happy to be performing whenever I perform at UCB. I'm very, very happy to perform anywhere. Mm-hmm. And there's no, I think like the stupidest thing you can do is like get, like feel like there's like status about improv.
Yeah. I mean, you probably...
It's made up. It's all made up.
It really is. But, like, I think you sort of got to bypass a lot of that by just coming in and doing the classes.
That's
and,
true.
Like, without without sitting there and watching these shows for years and building it up in your brain.
That's true. Well, that, I think, was a big problem. That's actually, I think, what became sort of a big problem of mine when I got on Mr. Crime was, like, I never doubted my improv, but there were some guys on the team that were, like, very into UCB and like very into like who's this and what's this, and they could name like every team for all of eternity and I didn't know any of that, and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God,
this
like,
is a whole nother level,
this is
of,
a thing that and I don't know this, and maybe like I like maybe this isn't like, and I and a lot of people in the community, I don't think in a mean way, but like I took very personally, were like, who are you,
you know? I would say I remember that because I don't think I knew who you were. I don't think I knew who, there was maybe someone else. No, I think I knew everyone else at the time. But I didn't think I know who you were. But there is always that thing of like, who is this person? Where is this person from?
But people were saying to me,
which
who
is
are
crazy.
You?
Who are you?
I mean, that's insane.
Which made me feel horrible.
Yeah.
Which made me feel really bad. And then it was like, I think it was that I had sort of rushed through the classes and been very solely focused mm-hmm. on getting on a Herald team. And then I got on it. And then there was like this huge like back wave of.
It's 100%.
Of insecurity. And,
of it, well, yeah. Just people being like, who are you? Like, do you deserve that? People being like, I've seriously never seen your face before.
It's 100% insecurity. I mean, it's 100% like jealousy and like seeing. Sort of comparing yourself. It's all comparing yourself to someone else. It's like, why aren't you around? Who are you? Yeah.
It's also meaningless because I think just as easily I've heard people be like, ugh, they got on because they're always around.
I know.
They got on because they do the jams.
It doesn't matter.
First of all, that's an insane thing to think that anybody is.
Oh, I go to the jams to be like, who am I going to ask Shannon to put on a team with me?
Right.
That's what I do.
It doesn't matter how someone gets on. You're always going to find a way to be like, what the fuck is their deal?
Yeah.
Because you know who else people said that about was Kate Riley.
Yeah.
As soon as Kate got on, people were like, who's she? Did you know she's just out
I could
of 401?
I can go through a long list of people who have had that.
That's crazy.
And have all been super successful.
Yeah.
Well, then I think then that's when I hung out at McManus constantly.
Right.
And I was out till like 4 a.m. all the time because I think I was really trying to like, I was like, I have to.
Was this like the high achieving Karen coming back, but now you had like a new thing you had to conquer, which was like,
I don't know. I also just like really like to drink.
Yeah. Okay. I just felt like she was in her element there.
I mean, yeah, I like loved, love hanging out and I love fucking drinking.
Yeah.
But I think there was a part of me that felt like I had to do it to fit in. Even if like all of Mr. Crime had gone home, I was still there, like still hanging out because I was like, I don't know anybody. And like, this is clearly a big part of this community is like, knowing people, and so I really like felt like I had to do that.
I would say it didn't take very long for you to become a person that everyone knew and everyone loved. Like, it wasn't a thing where you were an outsider for
long.
It's
really nice.
Just because, like, I think, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, but like, you know, you've gone through the same things we've gone through. Maybe if it's not in New York, you know, you're still speaking the same language as us. I think you could see that when you do your improv. And as someone who comes in and like, I think what people don't like generally is like someone coming to New York and like not learning the UCB system and like
not
being successful and not taking classes. But like you were
Nicole
a person. She said that with some disdain.
In such a specific way. And not taking classes.
But I think in watching you, Karen, you always were a person who was like, oh yeah, this person is doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. Like there's no shortcuts being taken. So moving on. So we did surfing, which was like
surfing,
6 months. And then we moved to
Guthrie. Which is 6 months.
Right. Was Guthrie
with Amos Vernon.
Mm-hmm.
Still with Amos Vernon.
Yeah, he was like my little hubby for a while.
What was that experience? So you guys hosted the jam and you also were a bunch of people on that team that were like maybe second team, most of them, right?
A lot of those were first
Lloyd.
Really? Herald team.
Oh, yeah, right. There were Lloyd
that
teams.
That was like the first time, I think.
A bunch of Lloyd teams. People came up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Denny,
I don't think surfing there was, or I think
Natasha.
Maybe surfing
Natasha.
they created Lloyd
when surfing was made.
Right. So Natasha would have been the first. Was Natasha the very
first? Well, she was one of the first,
she
I
might
think.
Have been.
That's a good trivia question. The first Lloyd to Herald Night promotion.
You want me to text her?
No. That's fine.
Okay.
Could it have been Rothwell?
Oh,
I think it was Natasha Rothwell.
Good job.
Yeah. She flew through the system.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. She's so funny.
She's so good.
She's crazy so funny.
Yeah.
So Guthrie was fun. I mean,
Was really fun.
That seemed like a
surfing
team that
was
super
really,
fun.
Really fun. Mm-hmm. Surfing was great. We really liked surfing, and we thought we were doing pretty well, and then we got broken up.
Yeah, I think at that time, it seemed like it was 6 months and out for most teams at that time.
Yeah, for sure. There was definitely a period where there were a lot of six-month teams. Mm-hmm. Just to go back to surfing, was it a relief to be on a team that, like, didn't feel like you had to, like, fix it and, like, constantly be...
Yeah, there was a really fun... I don't know if I... So surfing... One of the downfalls of surfing is we, like, never had a set rehearsal time that actually, like, I think took a big toll on psyche.
Yeah.
But, yeah, surfing felt really fun and, like, playing with people, like... That had, like, it was, I think, at least everybody's second team sort of on surfing. And that was really fun to feel like a little bit less pressure. I, in general, feel like I like bat cleanup a lot. Like, I'm always sort of like, okay, and your aunt. And that's how, and like, whatever. I feel like I'm always like making moves like that. And surfing, it felt like I had to do that less. And that was really fun. I don't mind playing the straight man a lot, but like, it's really fun to not play the straight man.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I really liked surfing.
So then you went through Guthrie.
And I went through Guthrie. Then I went to Grammar.
Grammar.
I think I was on Grammar for like 2 years.
Yeah, Grammar was a team for a while.
Yeah.
And that was a fun experience. Lots of great improvisers.
Love Grammar. Yeah, Grammar, I felt Grammar was like a really mature team.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to be able to settle into a team?
Great.
After like so much turnaround.
So great. I loved it. And I was back with Dan and Zach, which mm-hmm. was really great, and Kate Riley and Brandon Guglia, mm-hmm. Jenny Hagel and Laura, and then like my best friend Ryan Williams. Like it was great. We like really.
And you guys had coaching you for a while. Was it
clever? We had Ryan Carls.
Ryan Carls
for like the entire time.
Yeah, Carls.
That's great.
We like never well, see, stopped using Ryan Carls.
That's how you settle in is just having that regularity of
yeah.
like a set day and a set
yeah.
coach.
That's yeah, really it was great. And we really, and it was great because we like all really knew each other mm-hmm. and like we all sort of like could like see where moves were going or where they were coming from, but it was still really like playful and fun. And it was great. But, I mean, Grammar, I really, really loved being on Grammar. Mm. And it felt like we always had shows that like made, that were like good, strong shows. And then sometimes it felt like we had shows that were like really, really cool. Mm.
I have a question here from Rita.
Yeah.
At Britta James.
Yeah.
You recently took some time off of Herald Night for work.
Yeah.
And now you're back.
Mm-hmm.
Is tonight your first night?
No, yes, last week. Yeah. Right.
How refreshing was the break from Herald Night, and how excited are you to be back on Herald Night?
It's sort of weird. It wasn't, refreshing is a weird way to say it, just because right. I was working on a TV show where we were shooting like 12 hours a day.
Yeah, there wasn't like a real, like, I'm taking a vacation
yeah,
from this.
Yeah, show. So it was like my time was like totally gone. And I worked on two shows back to back where mm-hmm. I was on set for both of them. So that was like a lot of time and energy. But I was really sad to leave. I was really sad to leave Herald Night, and I wasn't sure if I was, like, totally ready to go. I've been on it for, like, 4 years, mm-hmm. so it sort of felt like graduating a little bit. But, like, one thing that I did realize, because I was working on these shows, was, like, I would write something, and then it would go to, like, the other writers, or it would go to the head writer, and then it would go to the network, and then I would get all these notes and whatever, and that's how that process works. But it was, like, doing improv, like, it's so great to just, like, have the freedom that it's, like, from me to the audience. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's
zero
that's
sort
it.
Of, yeah,
yeah, there's,
instant
like, no
gratification.
It's, like, instant. And it felt, it just, like, as having that as, like, a tool in your creative process, like, I really missed being able to just, like, have that freedom to just, like, go straight to the audience or, like, just be able to say whatever I wanted to say. And, like, you know, like, some notes can get so nitpicky where you're, like, switching words around in a sentence and you, like, get exhausted. So it was, like, I think I really just missed it.
Right.
Missed having that. Like, I missed doing improv.
So you had your first show back last Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And was it, I mean, was that something you felt immediately? You were just like, oh, that instant laugh.
I got like a little like, because I thought you, I was gone forever.
I know. That's what I was going to say is, I was going to ask you, did you think at any point you would come back? Or were you like, I'm leaving and, because it's so hard to get on Herald Night, I guess.
Shannon was very kind and right. she, when I left, she was, you know, like very kind about sort of being like, let me know how your life is going.
Yeah.
But I never, and I think I probably was close to emailing her and saying like, I think I might be ready to come mm-hmm. back, but I don't know. I did, there was a part of me that felt like, oh, maybe this is done.
Yeah.
When, was it a thought when you realized you did have the time to come back about whether or not you do it, or did you know as soon as you had the time that you would?
No, it was about whether, it was like, if I still fit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If I still sort of like belonged on the night, like it does sort of feel like I love doing it. Mm-hmm. And like I'll probably like I don't know if I would ever like choose to go. But there. Well, I don't know if that's true. But like there is sort of like looking at like Herald Night now, like they're mm-hmm. not it's not everybody who I sort of like think is my like generation or whatever,
right.
which is perfect. That's
yeah.
how it's supposed to be.
Right.
Like that's Herald Night is like a living thing that right. like moves and changes. And like that's how it should be. But I was like, I don't know if this is for me like at UCB anymore. Like, yeah. I don't know if this is for me.
But when you really examine it, your Dan Hodapps and your Zach Phillips, those guys are still, you know what I mean? Like, so there is a place. I mean,
totally. And like, and now I'm on a team with like Hunter and Matt Kleiman again, and you know, and like Michael Hartney. Like, it's all these people that I do like, that are so good. And Keisha, you know what I mean? Like, everyone's so great. So it's not, so it was really, so that team I think was a really good fit for me. And I'm really, really excited to be playing with them. Yeah. But it's not the same. By any means, the same like fervor as like Mr. Crime,
right?
You know what I mean?
Of course, of
like
course.
It's never. Now I'm like, it's an improv show. It's fun. It's great. It's really exciting. But
especially
it's an
having
show.
Worked professionally, you come back to it. You're like, oh, this puts all of this in perspective.
Yeah,
and I think also being on Grammar, which was such like a steady, consistent both team and also like part of your life.
Yeah,
to come back and be like, okay, it's not gonna be that. It's gonna be a different kind of good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that this crew will be, it already sort of seems like there's a similar vibe, you know, like it's not going to be like a drama fest.
Right. For sure.
You know?
Well, you know, if people are listening to this podcast, just know, don't worry about the drama. Leave it at home. Because I think that's
it's impossible.
Like,
that's impossible. So many people said to Mr. Crime all the time, just calm down. Like, just have fun. Just,
so
like, let
funny.
It go.
We
don't be scared of the Herald.
We
and
say
it was like,
every
how?
Single week. We say every single week, guys, just calm down. You know, everyone knows it. Everyone knows that you have to just be chill and you have to find a way to calm down. It normally takes your second team. But even with that, there's no way of avoiding it.
There's no way.
Yeah. Maybe the thing that we should be saying is like, yeah, freak out. Just do it. Just lean into the panic.
I think so.
Right?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like a Mr. Crime. We tried every way. Right?
What would leaning into the panic?
Leaned into the panic.
Lean into the panic. I don't know, man.
Full on have a panic attack backstage.
Don't fight it. Just let the waves pull you under.
I mean, it will take sort of a bottoming out. Like, it always takes the breaking up of the first team for you to be like, oh, okay, yeah, I can calm down.
It's true. I don't think we've had so many people on. We've never heard a story where somebody was like, yeah, man, my first team was like freaking the fuck out. Oh, we were all at each other's throats. It was so frustrating. We were trying so hard to make it work. But then here's what we did.
Yeah, and then
it's
it
like,
worked.
No, it's never the answer is always, and then we broke up and
there's
nobody
no
died.
There's no fixing it.
Yeah.
There's no fixing it.
You might as well, if you see a team freaking out, just break them up 2 months in. Switch it. They should do auditions and then 2 months later switch up the teams.
That's not crazy. I wonder if 2 months is enough. Or if it would just carry PTSD onto each
team.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah,
that's
really.
True.
That's my least favorite improv note is like, just have fun. I'm like, you know what's fun to me? Scenes that make sense and are funny and
oh,
that people
ooh.
Are listening.
Oh,
just
Karen,
have fun. That doesn't mean anything.
Karen, I've said this before, but that is
thank God.
The sentiment of two very famous coaches. You've got Pete Carroll, the Seattle Seahawks coach.
Oh.
And you've got... I'm not talking about sports now.
Coaches. Pete Carroll, the famous Seattle Seahawks coach who biffed the Super Bowl
Yeah, he blew it really, really hard.
Like,
I don't want to get into it. Don't, Drew Johnson, you'll be okay. But what I mean is, like, there's this sort of saying of, like, there's having fun and then there's having fun because you're doing it right. And I think when you're just telling people to have fun and not explaining to them how to do it right, it just is pretty problematic.
And I also think it creates, like, a troubling dichotomy where you assume that doing it right, therefore, cannot be fun.
Right.
So everyone starts to act like they hate doing it right. Or, like, that's something to look down on.
Yeah.
So let's transition into this. Karen, you've been teaching improv for a while.
Yeah.
And you've been able to teach at two different theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Do you bring things into that time in D.C., into the stuff you teach or coach here in New York?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it was a while ago.
It's a long time ago, and I don't think I'm like that introspect.
Right.
I might be. I don't know. I think, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Did you buy into the whole UCB game thing and just make that your own philosophy? Or do you still have your own sort of working philosophy that is both UCB and also influenced by other places?
I definitely buy into game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in D.C., we were doing a version of game. So, like, it always made sense to me. There was never a point. 201 we learn game, but, 301 is...
Herald.
Oh, 301's Herald.
I think it is now. It is now.
I know 201's All Game. I didn't hate 201. Right. I liked 201. I had fun in 201 because it made sense to me. I also like patterns and mm-hmm. like, you know what I mean? Like I like puzzles.
Yeah.
So like that always made sense to me, and that never was like confusing to me.
I think the more comedy experience you have previous to going into 201, the more you understand that most good comedy is doing a version of this.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But I think I think that how the characters feel about each other or how they feel about what's going on is always going to be like the most interesting part of the scene.
Interesting.
Totally. And I think that the strongest games come from that.
Right.
We all know, like, if the game's wordplay, like, that has diminishing returns very quickly.
Because there is no relationship to really.
Yeah, and there's no, like, justification for that. There's no, you know what I mean? Like, this guy says crate, this guy says puns all the time, or whatever it is, you know?
And there's also such a narrow way to be right when that's your
game. Yes, exactly. And I think less surprising.
Yes.
There's such a specific way that's like, he's going to say spaghetti at some point or whatever it is, you know? So I really believe that that's the most interesting part and like the funniest part about comedy is like how people feel about each other.
So concentrating on relationships, like you said, and game aren't mutually exclusive.
They
go together hand in hand, basically. Yeah.
And at this point, you've been at UCB longer than you were in DC.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I've been at UCB for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. Because I moved in 2010, June 2010.
Do you have a philosophy? Like, Michael, I have a hypothetical here.
Yeah.
So let's say you are coaching a group and they're all good, but they're not like great.
Yeah.
What is the thing that you think? What is the thing? How am I trying to ask this? Like, what's the Karen Hammerberg's key to success as far as like being great? Like, what do you say to people in order to be great? Like, good improvisers become great. What do you give them?
I haven't coached in so long. Mm-hmm. Probably maybe over a year. I would say that I think that the most interest, and I say this to, like, when I teach, and I would say this to groups that I coach to, like, you came in here with your own stupid ideas. The only interesting thing are the other person's ideas. And like you, when you put your two ideas together, now you're doing something really interesting and really new. Mm-hmm. But like, if it's just your idea, like go do stand up. But like, they're like, what's great about improv is that you're combining ideas on the spot. So like really listening and reacting and finding joy in honoring other people's choices will automatically make your scenes better and will make you a better improviser. It might not lead I would rather just watch a scene where people honestly listen and react to each other than like try to play a game.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you become a teacher and you watch tons and tons of scenes, that is always what it comes down to. It's like, I don't care what you do, just listen to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just don't.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of frustrating because I want, you know, I'm like, I want to talk about game, but like, I can't if you're not going to listen to each other.
And also, I feel like you watch so many scenes sometimes where that's not happening, that when it does, when a person says a line and then the next person speaks and it feels like that came from the last line that was said, it feels so refreshing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that's how humans, like, that's how people actually interact. And that's what's so funny about 101 is, like, I forget who said it. Somebody smart said it. But it was like, it's basically teaching them how to be human. Like in their seats when they're watching you, they're human. And then they get up on stage and they become these weird misogynistic aliens.
Yeah.
So then you have to like somehow like be like, what you were doing over there was human.
Is better.
What you're
Remember
doing
when you were sitting there quietly
human.
And listening to me talk?
Or even just casually having a conversation with someone in your 101 class about like what you did that day or how the subway was. Like that's a better scene.
Yeah,
but they don't know. They don't know, and that's not their fault.
This is why Park Bench of Truth is my favorite exercise.
Yeah, it's great.
Because it's almost always more engaging and funny than any scene that they're trying to do in that 101 class.
Yeah, but that's not their fault.
No, totally.
And that was a big thing too. That I was like, I stopped coaching because I realized like I didn't necessarily have the hours to be a part of somebody's 10,000
hours.
I didn't have the patience to be a part of everybody else's 10,000 hours.
Period, yeah.
Which they need to get, and they need to have those hours, and, like, it's going to start worse, and then it's going to get better, but, like, unless I, like, really cared about the people. And there were a couple groups that I coached, like, I kept coaching, but, like, in general, like, to, like, drop in on a group, and I would always just be like, I don't know, listen, and stop listen. Fighting, and it's just like I, yeah. I had no patience left, and that was my fault, not their fault.
It's so funny how that happens to you, because when you're coming up, you hear about those coaches, and you're like, God, that person's so cranky, or they say such defensive things, and then, like, fast forward, and you're there.
Yeah, I was coaching like 3 groups a day, and by the third,
God,
and by the third group, I was just like, I don't know, I hate you.
Here's my note.
Your suggestion is why
be less hateable.
Yeah.
God, that's so true. And I think it takes restraint to recognize that and be like, okay, great, then I shouldn't be in the room.
Yeah, I had to stop. Well, then I had to stop, and I really like teaching because I love teaching to the curriculum. But that was, and it was just hard for me to, at a certain like. I love teaching, and I do like coaching, and I bet I could go back now and be fine, but it was all me.
Yeah.
It was 100% all on me that I was just losing patience.
You can for sure burn out. Everyone
it's
talks about the burnout.
It's a really real thing.
I have a good question here. I think you read this one on Twitter already.
Oh, this was, I did have to look up one of the words.
Yeah, well, we had to look up a word. From @officialwiener, I believe it's Sophie.
Oh, yeah, it's Sophie.
Here's the question. This is going to hurt. A show you wrote with Glenn Boozen.
Mm-hmm.
Felt like a watershed moment at the theater to me. Have you made a conscious effort to bring that kind of pathos to the stage beyond the show? And then she also comments, I'm always struck by your character's humanity.
So nice, right?
Yeah.
I had to look up pathos.
You had to look up pathos.
Okay. Do you know what pathos means?
I think so.
I thought so.
Generally, we know what it is. I'm not going to say.
What a beautiful, smart question.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
For sure.
Let's talk about this. So you wrote a show with Glenn Booze Cruz. I call her Booze Cruz.
Yeah, I think she doesn't mind that.
No, she loves it. And it's called This Is Going to Hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, describe it.
I don't know. So it ran at the theater for a year, which was great. We don't do it anymore. And it was Glenn and I had started emailing each other every time that one of us cried, and we both cry a lot. So it would be like multiple times a day we would send emails. And that sort of like list was so funny to us. It was like very sincere. And like looking at those emails now, they're just like so sincere and so funny.
But wait. What made you start that list?
She had tweeted something about crying at a furniture store and then said, DM me for more details as like a joke. And then I did DM her and I was like, yo, what's going on in the furniture store? And so we started talking and she was like, whatever. And we just sort of realized we're both very emotional people. So then we were like, let's just start this project. And then I think like maybe a month or two into it, we were like, I think this could be a show. But we weren't quite sure how yet, so we like kept emailing, and then we started meeting. And it's sort of like a storytelling and a sketch show. So we sort of wrote sketches about characters who are very emotional or going through like a big emotional turmoil, and like all different types of emotion. And then we sort of realized as we were writing the show that we felt like we sort of needed to like turn it back on us, and so like we. At the end of the show, we would tell sort of the darkest moments of our lives in a very, I think, in a way that always felt very raw to me.
Yeah, very candid. And yeah. I saw The Spank, which I think was the first time you guys did it.
It was.
And it was, I think it did humanize you guys in an insane way in this kind of silly sketch show. And was like nothing I'd seen before at the theater. It was so genuine and so emotional.
Really emotional, and then we immediately turn around and make jokes about
it. And it was awesome. I mean, it got a standing ovation, I believe, at the Spank. I mean, one of the best Spanks I ever saw.
Thank you.
And it was incredible because I think what Sophie's describing, there was an incredible level of humanity to it and pathos and real sort of non-ironic, truthful.
Yeah, that's true. There was a lot of non-irony.
like literally not, that's what it was.
But that was also there throughout the show because I didn't see that Spank. I saw it later on the
show. Oh, yeah.
I remember hearing so much about like, they do these monologues at the end and then they do jokes about it and it's like amazing. But I was also struck by like how good the sketches were.
Yeah.
I was like, we need to talk about that more because they are like tight, original, really well done sketches.
I mean, I bet the show wouldn't have gotten a run without those great sketches.
No way.
But it able to have this.
Getting goosebumps that you guys are saying such nice things.
Well,
about.
It was a great show. I mean, it was really great.
Yeah. We loved and hated doing it. We only did it
once a month because it was tough.
Yeah. And I remember because Peter Scheer's show was scheduled with you guys. Yeah. You were also very careful to make sure you were the second show.
Because you couldn't be the first.
Yeah.
You could not expect an audience to then watch your book of Revelation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went and we did it in Boston at a comedy festival, I think a women in comedy festival, and it was in a block of three, and I think we were second.
Mm.
And I would say most of the audience was very, very unprepared for what was going to happen, which is just like how it goes. Yeah. And I would it was intense. It was really intense to do the show to an audience that wasn't UCB, and like it felt like people who didn't know what was going to happen.
Because there's something about doing it at UCB because you kind of know that a lot of the community is, they know you guys. I mean, and I guess when you're doing the run, it is kind of a lot of strangers.
It is a lot of strangers, but that was like our house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they were like coming to our house to see our show, and this was like we had taken our show to somebody else's house. Mm-hmm. And somebody else's city, and we were like, "Hey, Boston,
comedy festival,
want to get intense?"
Yeah,
yeah.
To address Sophie's question, is that something that you try to bring into improv, even in the slightest extent?
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's hard for me to say because I honestly, at this point, I don't think very much about my improv.
Right.
Like Frank Hale gave me the note the other day, be more active, and I was like, that's a good note.
Yeah.
and I was like, yeah, that's something I should try to do. But in general, I'm not on
thinking
stage being
it, right.
How do I do this? But I do I don't talk about this being the straight person that much anymore, but when I was coaching, I'd always sort of say be a straight person with a heart.
Mm-hmm.
Play it with a heart. Play it like you care about that person, mm-hmm. because that's going to make the scene more interesting. But that's also doesn't stop everything. We've all seen those straight people who
no,
you're crazy.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah.
You stupid bitch of a wife. And
right,
you're like, okay, divorce each other.
Yes.
But I don't want to watch this scene,
mm-hmm.
you know, but why not have some love in your characters?
Right.
Or even I think some strangers in New York do instantly fight when they talk to each other. But there are a lot of strangers who don't immediately hate each other.
Yeah,
and
there's lots of
try
that.
To be kind to each other. So I do try to play humans.
Yeah.
You know?
Was that, to go back to the show really quick, was that a departure for you, that type of comedy, or do you feel like you sort of have done things like that in the past?
I don't know. I would say, I don't know. I guess in general, I would say my characters are very quick to cry.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
My characters are very quick to cry,
right.
And I think sad stuff is really funny,
right.
And I think dark stuff is really funny and, really interesting, and I think, scraping at truth is always going to be, the most interesting part of any comedy is, finding that, you know what I mean? Finding that truth behind stuff.
I have been saying, and I've been talking to Brennan about this, but I think one of the things that qualifies a good game is a level of truth.
Yeah.
A level of this isn't just some absurd sort of back and forth. There is something here. Yeah, that's true. And I would say, like Sophie says, you are an improviser who plays real human beings. And it's tough. You know, there's only some of us that are so good at it. I'd say the you and the Catherine Mudons of the world and the Nicole Drespels of the world, of course, are very human characters on stage. And I think it's compelling to watch. And I think sometimes people forget that it's as easy as just being yourself or being a real human.
So similar to this, just talking about what you're drawn to, what you're interested in. This is maybe something you don't necessarily think about, but when you do an opening with a team, what kind of ideas do you find yourself gravitating towards to eventually pull into scenes?
Oh man, that's a good question.
As someone who doesn't think about their improv, so it's probably all instinctual at this point, right?
Like the stuff that I think is funny.
Funny, yeah.
Right.
That's, I think, it. Or an idea, just an idea that I can, wrap my head around and get an initiation out on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really just, what I think is funny. Because I honestly cannot remember that much from the opening. I really, everyone's always like, what's a trick? And I was like, I don't know. Just no I was like, remember
one idea. That's the
remember
trick.
Remember one of them. And if yours gets taken, then
just
you just
be a scene partner.
You'd be the second person out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the real
that
answer.
Is the trick.
You just can't say that in a classroom.
I'm always like, put something in your pocket.
I do that. I do the pocket thing.
No. Well, I think the trick is to not try to remember any, because by doing that, you'll allow yourself to truly listen, and then you will remember.
Maybe.
Like, I mean, remember as far as, like, if someone initiates, you'll know where it's
coming
from. Oh,
is that, like, the opening equivalent of telling people to just calm down and have fun?
Yeah, I guess. Right.
But I do find that we will do, and I mean, I only did one Harold, so, like, in the past, I don't know, 7 or 8 months. Mm-hmm. But I do know that this is what I think about myself. I commit so hard during the first group game that I often have no idea what the next beat is. And I would always say, I would go to Zach Phillips and I would say this, and he's such a word person, but I would always go, what scene is this? And then he wouldn't know how to answer, because what I was asking for him was to say like 2A or whatever, but he would, because I would say, what scene is this? He would be like, it's like a doctor and a... Like, he'd be like, how can you ask me a question like that?
Oh, that's the best.
Because he's so specific with words that, like, my, like, general question made no sense. But I often have a very hard time remembering what beat we're in, because I'm committed.
That's a
that's
good
amazing.
Thing.
To the now.
That is amazing.
That's that excuse that I came up with.
Yeah. I don't commit, best. So I know every scene. I know exactly where we are.
I used to be, like, really into it and, like, really, like, at first, I was like so hard into it, and now it's like whatever. Like it's all gonna be fucking made up anyway.
Well, I think you realize that you don't have to be into it to be in a successful premise based scene if you just kind of can recall in the moment.
But I think when you were so into it, were you as committed or present in the scenes?
I don't know. I'm sure I was like judging everything,
right?
You know, and now I really don't judge very much of what I do.
Right.
Is there a note that you give or would give that you feel like is... Because I feel like we've said a bunch of times, like, you note the thing that you need to hear a lot of the times. Like, I always give the note that I always got a lot, because it's the one I hear the most, and it's now the thing I notice the most. Which is just like, don't walk on to those scenes.
Oh.
Don't walk on to that first beat.
And it's also the note that you know is true, because you have
you've
seen
experienced
the,
you've
it. Lived the
you've experienced... walking onto a scene and having Pam Murphy look at you like you've just destroyed everything. Because you did. So, like, is there a note that you give?
A lot. Well, we talked about listening and reacting.
Right.
But
what's the note that Karen Hammerberg gives? Because Karen Hammerberg needs to know.
I'm trying to think. I really only teach.
Right. So you don't give that many specific...
So I don't give that many specific notes. But I think it really is, like, listening... Or I think, like, be a human.
Well, I would say that
stop treating your wife so mean.
I would say that
those
are things that you do.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say that you would give those notes to yourself.
I don't know what notes I get a lot.
But you have coached house teams. Do you feel like there were certain things that you carried into those that were like, I'm telling you guys this because I had to learn it the long way?
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know. I in general too, I'm always like, make it simple. Like, don't make it so like, and that's a hard note too, is like, you guys are making it harder than it has to be.
Oh,
it was
no.
Like, well, I'm not fucking trying to.
Yeah.
God, I think I'm Mr. Crime. I got that all the time. And I'm probably every team we've always, you guys are making it a lot harder. Well, I don't know. I'm not sitting in the audience watching the show. It's a lot easier to know what's going on. Like, I watch these 201 scenes and they think I'm a genius with my notes. I'm like, no. It's easy because I'm sitting in the audience.
Yeah.
Right.
The worst spot on stage is on the stage. Like, when you're in a scene, those are the people who have the least idea of what's going on.
You have the most blinders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have no idea what's happening. So for someone in the audience, it's like, yeah, it's very easy for me to come up with 50 good moves right now.
But is there a way then to get people to keep things simple? What's the easiest way to direct someone into doing that?
To me, it's listening and responding to the last fucking thing you're... I'm saying fuck a lot.
No, it's okay.
It's listening and responding to the last thing your partner said. And when people always say, like, I feel like I'm in a rut, I'm like, are you listening? Like, really, I think listening is so important. And you can find so much humor. There's so much humor in improv, honestly, and repeat. If your partner says something funny and you just repeat it.
Oh, yeah. Who knows why that's funny?
Who has any idea? The audience is just like, yay, listen. They listen to each other. Honestly, for me, it always comes back to listening.
I wonder how many people, if you really examine this, like, I'm in an improv rut. How often is that just like, I'm not able to say funny things when I'm needing to?
Yeah.
But it's like, well, just listen and the funny things will come to you. I wonder how many ruts come out of just like not listening.
I think that's probably true.
Is that the way to get out of a rut? Just start listening?
That's what I always say.
The advice I always give to get out of a rut, and I think they actually are kind of similar. I always say do two prov with people you love, like people you're crazy about, who like make you feel safe or you really like as people. I think it's because you are more instinctively likely to listen and react in those situations because you're not playing with like your defenses up.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. I give the note, it's like baseball, so it's okay to be in a rut.
And also, I think ruts don't actually exist.
No.
Like, I think they're not, they're statistically not.
I think
there will be sometimes, though, like there are times, don't you feel like there are some times that I step on the stage and like the audience is like on your side and you're like, I can do no wrong.
Yeah.
And then you come out and you're like, what's up, losers? And they're like,
yeah,
totally dead. And you're like, well, this isn't my
show. Something happened.
This isn't my show.
One of those, it's one of the reasons I hate hosting.
Yeah.
Because that's
if
the
I
worst
don't,
feeling.
If it doesn't go well for me in hosting, then I'm like, well, this is fucked. We don't like each other.
Yeah. I mean, I like to think of improv as like a low percentage success rate. So like I'm okay with being bad every once in a while because you can't be good all the time. So like
I think you can.
I think you can, but I think like you can be consistent. I think you mean you can be consistent.
I'm kidding.
But we're always chasing that like high, right?
Yeah.
So and getting there is so hard.
Yeah.
There's so much failure getting there. So like I look at ruts as just part of the process as far as like it's numbers, baby. It's Moneyball. Moneyball starring Brad Pitt.
Oh, God.
All right, keep going.
I also think part of the rut is like as soon as you decide that you're in a rut, because it's improv and because it's so emotional, you're hindering yourself. Like you're making it more likely that it's going to be hard for you to do well because you've come in with baggage.
Yeah, I think that's true. And then again, my thing is listen to your scene partner.
Yeah.
There are other people there and those other people are wonderful, smart geniuses and they have ideas that you've never heard of before.
Yeah.
And that's so exciting. Like that's the only exciting part of improv are the other people. It really is like, where's my laughs or like my stuff or I'm in a rut. It's like you're on a team where the whole point of it is building something with other people. It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
That stuff drives me crazy.
I think you're also so right that that's what makes scenes complicated because if we're taking it step at a time, it'll be easier to be simple. But if you say something and then I say something that doesn't go off of that, now we have to eventually find our way back to each
other. And even if
other.
You're two smart people and you started with two disparate things, it's complicated to make that come together, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're like, now I got to justify this and I'm going to justify this and I got to make this make sense. And then this is you're my sister, but we're also coworkers. Okay, here we go. And it's like, by the time you figure it out, the scene's over.
Yep.
Mm. Do you, I have a writing question.
Yeah.
So you've now worked on a couple of TV shows, you've been around writing rooms here or there.
Yeah.
So we know that there are skills that translate from improv to writing.
Yeah.
Especially being in a writer's room.
Yeah.
Is there stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think about that, you know, is there a relation that's like outside of just like working with other people? Did knowing game help you in a professional sense or is that something that isn't?
Yeah, I think, the sketch show I worked for wasn't super gamey, but I would
it was called
Friends of the People. But I would say that character games were really important. And then I worked on a sitcom called Donnie.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that too, character games were really important.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Just sort of like knowing like when you're pitching jokes or whatever, like with Donnie, like they were really nice and they let me like pitch a bunch of like polished jokes and like knowing the characters and knowing those character games like really helped me like write jokes that I think were more specific for their characters and we and a lot of them ended up getting used but I think it was because I like could it wasn't like I was just writing something funny in the ethos it was
you
that
had
I was
something
I sort of like oh this she's like a nervous character or she's like a bossy character or whatever and it was more specific than that but like sort of like within that then I could like write something that felt a little bit more like specific rather than something broad. And I think that's always sort of like the more specific we can get with stuff, the more interesting.
I get a little bit confused with character game versus just regular game.
I don't know the difference,
and
totally.
I don't know if there is a difference. I do understand what you're saying in the concept of like this is a character that will have very similar like points of view in lots of situations. So like there's a game to that.
Yeah.
But I get confused by it in the improv sense a little
bit. I don't know.
Bit.
I think all that stuff is bullshit.
In what way?
Well, maybe it helps people. For me, like, being able to, like, look at a game and be like, let's parse out the character, if it's a character game or if it's this, or if it's this or this. Like, all of those terms, I think, can be useful in learning stuff. But, like, I'm never on the back line being like, what's the character game here? I'm just like, how do I support what's happening?
Yeah. I think, like, analogous versus time dash is also kind of similar. I think the vast majority of scenes of Second Beats, it doesn't matter.
No.
It only matters if it's, and I think this is similar to character games, it only matters if there was a specific way of speaking or moving that was, like, crucial to the character, and do we want to bring that back or not?
But even that, I don't think about that.
Yeah.
When I'm going for Second Beats, too, I'm like, what's the funniest place I can do this? Like, what's the most interesting place I can do this? Like, I really don't, what I thought was the funniest part of that scene.
You've said a bunch now that you don't think about it, which I think is for sure the way that most of us operate. We've learned and done so many classes that we kind of forget the rules.
Yeah.
How much do you think, I mean, I guess I know the answer to this, but I guess we're saying that, like, instincts, comedic instincts, are something that we rely on at this level. Is that something that's teachable, or is that something that's acquired?
I don't know. I think that's, well, I think that's part of your 10,000 hours. And I think that's what's so great about improv. And I love improv, but I also really feel like it's like an exercise. Mm-hmm. And, like, we do shows and
like
stuff.
A sport?
Yeah, well,
Nicole?
Yeah.
Well, right. It's a sport, but we don't have to talk about sports. But, like I think improv is really good at, like, honing what you think is funny and honing how, like, you want to make jokes and, like, honing all of these skills. And I think, but that's part of putting in your time. And that's, like, you know, like what I say about, like, practice groups and stuff, like, that's part of your 10,000 hours and you need to do them even if it's not good and you leave rehearsal crying or whatever it is. I've left so many rehearsals crying.
Well,
like,
you've established that you're an emotional
person. I cry all the time.
Where do you cry?
Just, like, on my way home.
Okay.
Great question.
One time I went to Whole Foods, but that's because I was hungry.
Sure. I had places all around Harold where I've cried. I think I wrote a review of places one time.
That's great.
Sunglasses?
No, I don't care.
Oh,
do you
good
have...
for you.
I'm, this one time, this is a story that you guys can edit out. Mm-hmm. This,
wait, can or should?
We won't.
Probably both.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
I was at work at Discovery. And I got a phone call that my grandma had a stroke.
Oh,
and I had to leave work and, like, go home. And I was wearing, like, thigh-high boots and kind of a short skirt. And I was on the subway in the middle of the day bawling. I mean, I was crying so hard, just, like, really going to town. And I had sort of my back turned to, like, I'm turning my back to you guys, mm-hmm. but, like, I had my back sort of turned to the aisle, and this kid comes up to me, and he was like, "Hey, lady." And I turn around, and I'm like, "What?" And he was like, "I'm so sorry."
No.
Sorry, but I was just, like, really, like, and I think he was, like, I don't know if he, it was, like, a kid, and I don't know if he was gonna, like, hit on me, or he was gonna, like, mess with me, or maybe he was gonna, like, be really nice and mm-hmm. great, but, like, I clearly, he was so taken aback by how aggressively I was crying in public.
Well, then, I guess I have a question.
Yeah.
So, as someone, you said you've cried after many rehearsals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there...
Do you want time? Because I have a question.
No.
They're ready.
Go ahead and ask it. It might be the same question.
What makes you cry after rehearsal? What kind of stuff?
Well, I would say, let me think. I think any time I started something new, I cried. So I cried when I joined Recess, which is my college group, mm-hmm. Like for the first couple of months or whatever. And then I cried when I started WIT, I think my first team at
WIT.
Out
of happiness or out of, like,
no, I think out of, like, frustration and, like, mm-hmm. and I cried when I started Harold. And I think that, I mean, with Mr. Crime, I was like, cause we weren't working. And then, I cried when I started Maud. And it's just, I think there's just sort of, like, this frustration or sort of, like, this thing of, like, meeting these new people, and I cried when I started Friends of the People. Like, mm-hmm. I think it was just, like, meeting these new people and, like, wanting them to understand me and understand my comedic voice and understand where I was coming from. But, like, but they all have so much going on that it felt like I was sort of, like, not being heard or not being, like, listened to or sort of, like, being pushed to the side a little bit. And, like, I don't deal with that really well. But so, like, it was, like, very frustrating because I was, like, I just wanted to be past the point where we were, like, doing these, like, weird I don't know, it just felt, I think all of them, it was just also this new experience where, like, just getting getting all these new people in a creative space together is always going to have, like, this emotional... I can't, like, totally describe it.
I know. I totally get it. I think especially if you are sensitive to the feelings or what you feel like you're receiving from other people, it can be both exhausting and also... Yeah, it feels like you're taking on a lot.
I figured out how to ask my question.
Great. Okay.
Let's say you're teaching a class.
Yeah.
You're teaching a whatever level it is.
Yeah.
After class, one of the students starts bawling.
Yeah.
And what would you say to that student?
I'd be like, cool, go for it. Like, if there's something that you want to talk to me about, and if there's something, like, that I, like, a, like if it's, I really don't know, though. I wouldn't say that I teach in a way where I think that, I'm really, like, teaching the curriculum.
Yeah, no, I don't mean in any way that this is, like, your fault. I just mean someone is crying out of the same frustration
that you
would
cry. So I would say, like,
of.
Do you want attention right now? And they might say yes or no, because sometimes people don't want attention when they're crying and they just want to, like, cry. And if they're like, yeah, and I was like, great, like, let's talk about what's going on, like, what's happening, like, why are you feeling like this? But it's really just a lot more listening than it is, like, saying anything.
I think my first instinct, and it's probably wrong, is to be like, hey, don't cry.
Yeah, don't say that.
That's wrong.
That's
come on,
so
Nicole, go
dumb.
Get him, Nicole.
I know it's dumb.
So get dumb.
What I said, I knew it was dumb. I said my first instinct
Nicole, is wrong.
Nicole okay, moved to the microphone, and I would say like
look,
a slow mo
totally,
action.
I am totally.
What do you think that's gonna do?
No, listen. I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm saying my first instinct, and I know I'm wrong. Would be like, look,
here.
It's just improv. I don't want you to
you
get
want a
so
note
emotional
on it?
About it. Yes, please.
I would say...
This is why I asked the question.
Rather than saying, don't cry, say, it's going to be okay.
I probably would say that. But I would probably
but
say both
I think
be,
to me,
wrong.
But I would say it's going to be okay. Because you don't ever want to invalidate... In general, you don't want to invalidate how someone feels.
Yep.
And so, like, and a lot of times, like, if you're crying, it feels, like, good, and you want to get those emotions out. And, like, I think... And, like, yeah, just tell them it's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think... The problem with don't cry is that the listener feels like, okay, I'm feeling whatever I'm feeling, and now I'm also dumb and maybe inconvenient to this person.
Yeah, look, just so the listeners
so
know.
Dangerous.
Just so the listeners
he knew
know,
it was a bad idea.
I knew it was a bad idea. This is the answer I wanted, because I know that there are students that are out there that are emotional after certain things happening, and I want them to know that it's okay. That's why I asked the question.
I'm trying
genius.
To think if I
okay.
cried after any of my classes.
I knew what I was doing.
I never cried after a class, and I don't think I ever cried in front of anyone. Well, I definitely don't. That's a good. I never thought about the attention thing.
Yeah,
I think that's really smart.
Well, I'm not.
I definitely don't.
I'm not.
Yeah. But sometimes you want to. Sometimes you are like, yeah, I want to try to like get this out.
Right.
So I'm saying I'm not a crier, but. For people that aren't, I think it's also important to understand that some people are, and like it's not wrong for them to be having an emotional response to a show. Or
if anything,
something.
It's fucking right.
Yeah,
that just means they care about what's happening,
totally,
that they're
totally.
Crying. Mm-hmm. If I didn't care, then I wouldn't cry. I'm crying because I'm really invested in what I'm doing.
Totally. Well, that's why I asked the question, and I'm really glad
Sean.
We got that out. I'll be the bad guy if we can get out the
right
answer.
No, I don't
think
you're being the bad guy at all. I don't think anyone's being the bad guy here.
Anyways, thank you so much, Karen. I think this was great.
I hope I said all the words right.
I think we said enough.
I feel like sometimes I got stuck and I didn't say the words right.
We forgot Amos, but that's really the only real problem that
we
have.
We replaced Amos with two Paul Higbees.
We said Paul Higbee twice. But thank you so much.
I could name it now. No, don't ask me. I honestly also tried to like study for this, and I was like, and then I went to surfing, and I was on surfing with Amos and Zach Phillips, and they were in D.C. with me, and then. Like,
well, I'll be grading perfect. Your quiz portion of the interview later.
I hope it's okay. Yeah, go back and look who my 101 teacher was.
I will. Thank you so much, Karen.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
I think we got to talk about all the stuff that I wanted to talk about the show, and I think it was, an amazing show. You and
thanks.
Glenn, both. What a feat. I saw the spank.
Glenn's a genius.
It was phenomenal. And perennial great performer at the theater. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. This was great.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversation podcast. If you haven't already subscribed, go ahead and do that. And you can also go to iTunes and leave a rating or review. That would really help us out. In the future, if you want to ask us questions or ask questions to our guests, you can follow us on Twitter at UCB Convo and look for postings there on future guests and future activity. Guys, I'm feeding the nerds left and right. We'll see you next week.